Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello, I just saluted at them for no reason.
You did? Well, the video people will appreciate it. Yeah. And Rich Hudson.
Hello.
Hello. Now, do you guys remember demos?
Oh my God, yes, I
good.
Do.
Back in my day.
That would have been really bad if I said no, wouldn't
if
it?
If you both said no right now, we haven't got a podcast.
Just go. So, we'll just go.
Thanks for watching. No, that was never a thing that happened at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw Rich Kennedy before because we're in the sort of aftermath of Ghost Recon and we've been talking about it in the office. And you can go find a video on the main channel as to Ewan and Ewan's sort of general thoughts on the state of the Ghost Recon Breakpoint Alpha. But then we sort of thought, like, you know, the general state of demos and betas and early access and all that type of stuff. There's a lot to pick apart. So yeah, I kind of wanted to just open by literally saying, do you remember demos? Because for me, they were a brilliant thing.
And demo. I don't even just remember demos. I remember demo discs.
Mm, yeah.
Obviously, that and the YouTube lexicon, you'll probably be more familiar with Funhouse doing their little demo disc series. They take old demo discs and play them. Buggy. It's really funny. But yeah, I remember getting like original Xbox magazine and stuff like that. And you get the earliest one I can remember was a demo disc that had the Futurama game on it, which was amazing.
I forgot the Futurama game even happened.
The Futurama game was a thing, and I found it really difficult to play. But whatever, the demo disc, I remember that. I remember when they released the first Star Wars special editions on DVD.
Right.
If you put that DVD into your Xbox, you had a demo of Star Wars Battlefront, the very first Star Wars Battlefront.
That's so cool.
And yeah, so I remember all of that. And then obviously when you got Xbox Live, you had all the stuff that you could download. Yeah. You had different multiplayer demos, had different things. And then the weird thing is, I remember demos going the way of the Dodo, the demo Dodo, when it was kind of, it was the last gem. Mm-hmm. And I do remember there was a study or something that came out where people said that video games that had demos released online saw lesser sales overall because people were just playing the demo. So like if you were playing like a multiplayer demo, and you, all your friends had it and you were content with just that one map and those features, you could feasibly just play that demo over and over
again. That was always the weird double-edged sword to it, because obviously if they give you too much, then you're satiated by that and you never go forward. And like one of the other sort of sides to it was always, I kind of thought with this generation, a lot of the demos went away, like, because then you're encouraged to blind faith. You have to go off blind faith and buy day one, and you're not as informed as a consumer, which I think has kind of become the mentality across this generation overall, that idea of trying to get as much money out of each consumer as possible. But yeah, Richard, if you have any fond memories of demos.
I remember playing the PS1 demo disc 1 with Oddworld on it?
Oh god, yeah.
I remember playing the Oddworld demo
98.
And having no clue at all what to do, how to play. All I remember was the fact that I could fart.
So did you find the fart button?
I found the fart button.
Good.
And I was like, cool, this is a good game. Evil. I'm not going to play this ever, but sure. But no, like one of my favorite games ever came from getting the Xbox magazine and a demo disc, and that was Split Second.
Oh, shut
playing up. That, playing the one track with one car over and over and over and over again. And that did lead to a purchase for me. Demos in the past for me have always led to purchases.
I
can understand why like a demo would lead to less people buying it, because obviously they get the chance to try and think, yeah, this isn't for me, let's not bother. But then it obviously opens the door of more people playing demos to eventually buy games, and I'm sure we'll get to that.
As a general sort of thing to have in the industry, for me, I think it's nigh on essential. Like, I think you should know what you're buying into. Like, it's not, you know, it's a big time investment. Like, the average length of a game is about 15 hours, et cetera, so it's like, to have something available just beforehand, I think just makes so much sense. I said before that they don't exist anymore. They do. It's just that they're not front-loaded as much, and it's not anywhere near as much of a talking point.
Well, the weird thing is, you could even say that the finished product these days is kind of a demo, because games as a service dominates everything. So you literally invest in a multiplayer title day one, you are effectively playing a beta, because it's always Red Dead Online has been in beta since October. The game's been out for over a year.
It's like looking at the Ghost Recon Breakpoint, like looking at some of the artwork, and they said, oh, here's our roadmap. And it's like, well, so then basically the base game you're getting is the demo mm-hmm. because the rest of the stuff isn't there yet, mm-hmm. which obviously it's just another conversation for another time.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, like the amount of patches, the amount of little tweaks and fan feedback and everything, they were things that you used to associate with this sort of designated early period. It is like a weird kind of paradigm that we've got to that state now, where yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it, that we sort of, the demos are the full games now. But yeah, as like a general question, like I was going to say, how essential is a demo to like a purchase? Because I think we had to get used to the fact that we had to go in more blind at the start of the generation. But a lot more big tier games do kind of come with demos. But like you were saying before, like for the most part, demos did actually feed into like
for me,
a worthwhile
yeah,
thing.
Resident Evil 2 this year, I would not have played that game if I hadn't had the demo.
Right.
And tried it and thought, okay, this is really good. Because as I've said a million times this year, it was my first Resident Evil game I've properly played.
So good.
So playing that demo for, what, like 30 minutes?
Yeah, yeah. They timed you out, but you could do whatever you want in those.
Yeah,
things.
I managed to actually get through the whole demo in that nice. Time. I was really happy. I was like, oh my God, I've done it. I mean, that was the thing that made me buy it. If I hadn't have beaten the demo in that allotted time slot, I maybe would have thought, okay, maybe
mine
maybe
cut out just as I got the shotgun. I was I
managed to get through it, and I thought literally right there and then I'd finished the demo. I went straight online and bought the game straight away and downloaded it and continued playing it from then straight away. So yeah, like that led to a sale for me.
Mm-hmm. I think it is that balancing act of like, how much do they need to give you? Giving you a timer on what is ostensibly the finished version of the game is like, look, if
it's
you play
the
more,
best way to do
you
it.
Can just keep going, which is what Xbox Live Arcade used to always do. They would mandate demos. And if you want to keep going, you want to keep playing, you just pay the money right there and then and keep going.
I remember you had the trial version.
Yeah, I loved that.
Yeah, I remember
that. Was really handy.
Yeah, because it would download the entire game. Like, mm-hmm. That's how, even like with the Switch, like most of those demos, they do download as separate things, but half the time you can just press a button and it goes, okay, there you go, there's the game.
I mean, I got Scott Pilgrim the game and Castle Crashers from playing the trials. Yeah. And then I got just unlocked them straight away. In terms of actual games that like then got me a purchase, I remember playing the Red Faction Guerrilla demo religiously, which then led to a full purchase.
Captain Toad. Treasure Tracker on the Switch, a game I was always kind of keen on. Mm-hmm. And when the demo came out, I thought, yep, buying this.
The Switch is interesting as like a side point as well, because the initial version of the eShop didn't launch with demos. Like, it's something that Nintendo have put back in. And a lot of people at the minute, I keep seeing talking about the new Dragon Quest XI demo. Like, that game's already out.
Yeah.
Or it's out on PS4 anyway. But that game on Switch, you can play about 8 hours of it. It's a massive chunk of the game.
Wow.
It's a drop in the ocean compared to the length of a Dragon Quest game, sorry. But the Dragon Quest demo for Dragon Quest XI is like this massive mammoth thing.
But it's even with like the direct the other night, there was a good like 2 or 3 points they made of like, there's a demo.
Yeah.
They're really bringing demos back. So I think it has helped. Yoku's Island Express is another game I played off a demo from a demo.
I think as well, like the word demo kind of implies like a certain level of quality that like a beta or an alpha doesn't have. Yeah. We can kind of get into like the meat of that stuff. Like, I guess for me, like that idea of like early access and buying into a game earlier, I've never done that. I've never bought into like a Greenlight project or anything like that. But what do you guys, have you guys done that?
I've never pre-ordered to get access to the beta, because that's just them saying pay a premium fee to test our game for us, which makes no sense in my mind, you know. But you know, if it's there, it's there. Mm-hmm. For Breakpoint, I haven't pre-ordered it. I got given the beta from being a Uplay member.
Oh, Mr. Play.
But yeah, like, I don't know, it's weird. I've never really saw demos as an incentive to actually then buy something before it's even released. So like, I remember when the Arkham Asylum demo came out, I was already heavily invested in that game.
Right, yeah.
The demo just kind of was there to tide me over until release. I remember playing that opening thing for over and over and over and over and over again.
The electric fences over.
Yeah, yeah, just keep on doing that. I don't know, it's weird. It's like, I think demos definitely serve less established franchises, potentially more so. It's weird as well, because EA do them all the time with like FIFA.
True.
There's always a demo for FIFA every single year, and I think it's because, you know, they try and trick people into thinking that something's changed every year when invariably it hasn't. So I don't know, it's very, very weird.
I do think with something like FIFA, it's a known quantity. Like, at this point, they should know exactly what they're putting out, kind of thing. Obviously there was the big shakeup where they changed engines a couple of years ago, but that's the thing. If I was going to theorize it, I think that we got way more demos in the 2000s and the last generation, because the general development cycles and publisher deadlines were way more concrete and way more, they knew what they were working towards. Whereas a lot of this generation, we've seen so many stories about crunch culture and failing to catch up with, you know, the needs of the consumer. And there was all that thing at the beginning of the generation that the general sort of industry commentary was that consoles were dying and the PC was the way forward and whatever. And no, it wasn't written by you, Richardson, but that was this whole thing.
I wouldn't go that far. Come on.
But that was just kind of this whole thing that like all these developers were like, oh no, everything is going to be on PC. And when those new consoles dropped and the PS4 started selling again, it was like, oh my God, actually people do want consoles. And and we've just been playing catch up for like the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the early access, like beta culture, that is definitely something that spawned from PC, because indie developers, they're more suited towards PC because it's an easier platform to program for mm-hmm. without having dev kits and stuff like that. You just need a PC and you can make PC games. Mm-hmm. So things like Steam Greenlight back, oh, God knows whenever that was first launched. It's now Steam Labs. It's been through a bunch yes. of different names. But that was a case of, you know, you buy a game from a developer who's very, very small. They've got very little going on. You can buy the game. You can support the team. Mm-hmm. You can help them make this game. And a lot of games still do that. I think the most egregious example was DayZ,
right?
That stayed in early access on Steam for, I think it's like 4 or 5 years.
It was a long time.
And, yeah. it was and they were like, oh, here's the Xbox version. Oh, and here's the PlayStation version. It's like, so when are you actually going to finish any of these yeah. games? And, you know, for the smaller indie titles, getting that feedback, you know, they can't afford a QA team. Mm-hmm. They can't, they don't have the finances to be able to do that. And then having basically the public QA team and also the money coming in from those purchases. I think Steam, I don't know whether Steam Greenlight had like a maximum amount you could charge for your game, but it was mm-hmm. obviously a much lower cost mm-hmm. to jump in. And there, sometimes that would help you. Like, I remember buying Minecraft back in 2010 for like a fiver.
Right. Mm.
And that was in alpha when I bought it, the last day of alpha.
Uh-huh.
And that went from there. Mm-hmm. But other games, you know, things like a double A game, as PUBG, for example, that started in early access. Mm-hmm. And they had a roadmap and they said, right, we're going to get 1.0 out by the end of the year. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the game was huge. They made a load of money off it and they stuck to that cycle. DayZ didn't do that. And then all these big companies, all the AAA mentality has now been brought into that whole idea of, hey, we can give people the game early and basically beta test it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this whole every single game now has got a beta access mm-hmm. only if you pre-order it,
That's the thing, like the way that those sort of mentalities have been like monopolized, so that the way you can start, like you said, like both you guys said, you can tie money into, and then it doubles as a QA thing because they get mm-hmm. so much data and feedback. But like, yeah, if you're doing all you can, you know, pay to play like a couple of months early, but it's their more buggy version of the game, and then they kind of profit, you know, they get the kind of thing that, you know, you should
it's
usually
weird as well, because like if you, again, it's almost like we've come back to how the games are like the consoles now, where the industry effectively punishes its most loyal customers.
People, yeah.
So if you get into Star Wars Battlefront 2 day one, you're getting a completely different game to how it is a year or so after its release.
Same with Siege.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even the same with Battlefield, the way it's going at the moment. And it's interesting to me is I genuinely think the lack of demos and the rise of beta alphas is tying into this whole idea of games as a service. Mm-hmm. I definitely think that the reason why that's happening is because games are constantly evolving. The game is never done once it's out now.
Yeah.
And that has its own strengths and weaknesses. I think there are definitely loads of positives to that model.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, if you get a demo of a game that's going to be constantly updated post-launch, how can you be certain that's going to be representative of the final product to begin mm-hmm. with? So is there even a point in bringing out a demo?
It's weird with the early access thing. I remember when Devolver really like took the mick out of their stuff. It was their 2017 E3 conference where they talked about, like, you know, the earliest access. And it was like, as soon as something is remotely playable, we'll charge you for it. And it was like, you know, just taking the mick out of like the big AAA companies that sometimes do put builds of games out that are buggy as hell, you know, hence Ghost Recon Breakpoint or whatever. And sometimes it is the case where like it's easy to sort of go down the, you know, theorize nefariously and be like, you know, there is just some big fat cat suit or whatever that is putting out the most earliest edition of a game. But sometimes when the games look like that you're playing, it's kind of like, well, that's what it feels like.
That brings with it its own question as well. It's like, well, if the game, you know, it's all great, you know, championing Siege and Battlefront as being like, oh, this is how they turned it around, look where it is now. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, that's an amazing job. They've done that through concerted community feedback mm-hmm. and actually, you know, sticking to their guns and carrying on with the premise. It has to be asked, you know, well, why didn't you just wait until you had the game in a similar position before releasing it?
I always think, go back to Fallout 76 with that, the Breakers early test application. It's one of those things, that was the point when it was like, this is coming out, like, what was it, like 2 weeks before the game release was the beta.
It's not a beta.
Yeah. It's blatantly, like, a beta happens way before mm-hmm. like the game releases. Like, when does Wild Breakpoint come out?
October.
Still a bit of a push that, like a beta for that game, I would have put in the spring,
because it's more like
summer, because you need that time to actually fix it.
Uh-huh.
Fallout 76 being a prime example of, here's the game, it's completely broken. It's like, yeah, it's a beta. That's how they frame it to make it like, it's okay, it's meant to be broken, it's a beta,
yeah.
But it's also 2 weeks from release. This isn't a beta version of a game. It's like with the alpha for Modern Warfare you mentioned earlier on today, Ewan. It's not an alpha.
Yeah,
right.
It's a word to say, look, this is an early access
thing. We can get you
thing.
In.
We can't call it a beta because the beta is the thing that's the private thing for the pre-orders. We're going to call this an alpha. If this were an alpha, you would have test maps, you would have reload animations that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. You would be playing this 2 years ago if it were an alpha.
An alpha is the very initial thing.
Yeah.
Which like is that's the thing. And because you were saying about the difference between like a beta or an alpha is usually terms that are used in-house. They're usually things that should be done in-house. Yep. And like the betas as they exist for the most part today, like the feedback they'll get, for Ghost Recon as an example, the feedback that they'll get from the Breakpoint alpha, you know, will only go into the game post-launch. Mm-hmm. So it's like they benefit from the pre-order window beforehand if anyone is, you know, pleased by the state of the game as it is at the minute. And then it's only going to get continually patched and updated anyway, so you're only really getting the alpha for the demo that is eventually the final game in another 2 years or whatever, which obviously is the case in like Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But I think that's just a weird state of the industry when you contrast it with the likes of the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo or Just Cause's demo or whatever back in the day, like where it was meaningful chunks of games and they really took their time. It's hard theorizing on that stuff. Like, I don't know if it feels that way to you guys, that things are rushed out more, like something
absolutely.
Like Ghost Recon kind of feels
as like, yeah. As you know, the point I initially was going to make when I said Fallout 76, my mind went the opposite direction. was the idea that if they release that game this winter, this autumn, mm-hmm. I think it would be a lot better, like better received than it is now. I stick by that. Mm-hmm. It should have had another year in the oven.
Very
76 would have been a much better game.
Yeah, very few games this generation you can say if you stuck around and played it a couple of years later that the launch day version is exactly the same as what you got later.
But this is the really, really weird thing is that, you know, we see these games mount their comebacks from listening to the diehard segments of the community, especially mm-hmm. in case of, you know, Battlefront. But it's like, whereas before, you know, game developers would take feedback on board between sequels and see what they could implement that way, now it's a case that, you know, it's post-launch where they realize, oh, we'll start listening to you now. It's a really, really weird system because obviously sequels, Breakpoint's a really good example because obviously the full game hasn't come out yet, mm-hmm. but, you know.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You can see the clear sense of progression where you've got new mechanics being introduced that were directly introduced as a result of fan feedback from Wildlands. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, there's the lack of polish and you'll see that game develop further and further as more players grow accustomed mm-hmm. to it. And it's weird as well. Like, Red Dead Online's a similar thing where it feels as though Rockstar have always had a long-term plan to introduce these things, but for some reason or another, it's been handled very, very slowly.
Months and months and months at this
point.
Too.
It's very weird, and it's difficult to nail down a reason for each thing. So obviously, each game is unique. Each studio is unique. But it's interesting that I struggle to find a correlation, necessarily a causation between certain models that are being adopted.
And it's like if you listen to a whole bunch of different developer interviews, I forget what the name of the dude is that owns Iron Galaxy. It's Dave someone. It's ludicrous because I can't think of his name. But he's talked about when he's been talking on Giant Bomb before about the reality of game development and analyzing the different matrices that go into game development. You know, this thing affects this thing. And you want to polish everything up and whatever. And it's like if you never put an... If you let that date just be up, you know, you can come out whenever you want, then he was saying the games would never get finished. Like it would always be... There'd always be a coder saying, well, I can make that a better, I can tweak this, I can do this. And it's like it is trying to set those goalposts, but I feel like they've kind of become like nooses. They've sort of just been choking so many games, and something like Ghost Recon just releases so buggy. And then most early access stuff too, if you're getting in at midnight, those initial servers are always like most of the time they fall apart anyway, even if it was meant to be a server test months beforehand. I don't know if you guys have experienced that with like certain games and stuff. Something like comes to mind in terms of where
things go wrong, like server-wise. I mean, it didn't happen for me because I was on PC. But the the console versions of World War II with the headquarters, that all got shut off because it completely went cock up.
World War II was completely broken on console for the entire month that I played it.
It did kill that game.
Yeah. Like, it was a real shame because honestly, World War II is probably the best of the new gen Call of Duties, I would say.
Ooh, Black Ops 4.
There.
Ooh, it is.
No, it's not.
Oh, Black Ops 4.
No.
This is a pod for a different time.
No, honestly, I think World War II is one of the best of the new gen ones overall for both for campaign multiplayer and the zombies mode. I think, but yeah, the fact that the headquarters was completely busted on a console from launch, that's an example of like server side things going wrong. Drive Club is another one for PS4.
Yeah,
server
totally.
Side completely went cock up on launch. And
Drive Club's weird because they announced that so much as like the reason you want to get invested in PS Plus, and it's going to have this PS Plus edition of the game and whatever. And then it seems like the realities of that game's development were nowhere near as concrete as their advertising made it out to be. But like that's the thing. It's like I kind of want the industry to get back to where it was in the 2000s, where things felt more planned. Yep. I don't know if that's a consequence of something like social media and the fact that we have more of a window into games development.
I wonder if this is also partially a backlash to season passes. And the reason why companies are adopting this now, you know, we have roadmaps funded by microtransactions. And, you know, whereas before with season passes, that's a clear progression. You can say, okay, we can predict how many people are going to invest in X amount of season passes or X amount of content add-ons so that we can create and fund a schedule to do with it. With microtransactions, I guess the feeling is that you can get a metric from that, but it's less... it's less clear. I feel as though people—it's in a weird way—were more eager to invest in season passes than they were in microtransactions. Even though you know they're both doing the same job in a very similar way.
At least a season pass is, like you said, a designated amount of things that are coming. Like
yes.
It's somewhat you know what's coming, as opposed to the ever fluctuating market.
But now the whole onus is on developers shipping DLC for free as a result of microtransactions.
Yeah. But I think that's because the season pass itself evolved into something that isn't the season pass. The first case of a season pass I ever used was in Black Ops 2.
Okay.
And that was when they said, right, it's Call of Duty, there's 4 DLCs per year for per game. You're going to get all 4, but you'll get it for slightly cheaper. But the DLC run, the way that it'll be delivered will be the same as it has always been.
Right.
Since Black Ops 1 was the first time they did 4 DLCs per game.
Because I remember and that was when they actually knew what was coming.
Yeah, that's the thing. That was always planned out. And then Black Ops 3 had exactly the same. World War II had exactly the same. Black Ops 4 with their whole Black Ops Pass, because that was when the season pass controversy started, and Activision went, no, we're not doing it either. We've called it something else. It's not a season pass. And it wasn't a season pass because it just became you've now bought into something that you don't even know what you're getting.
I remember when
you genuinely don't know, because all the multiplayer stuff came out at different times, all the zombie stuff came out at different times, people weren't happy with it, with the multiplayer stuff, all the zombie stuff, and it was like, before it was like, right, 4 multiplayer maps, zombies map, like 4 times in this next year. With a Black Ops Pass, we just don't know.
Yeah, if you're calling it a season, obviously, it's right in the name, like you're paying for a certain season of content. I remember when Bethesda brought Fallout 4 out and they literally publicly said they didn't know what the DLC was going to be, but they were going to monitor what people wanted and go from there. But they're still charging for a season pass.
Yep.
And it was just such a kind of brazenly empty thing that I just kind of was like, yeah, that's kind of emblematic of how little, or how kind of sporadic this new industry kind of is.
But obviously then opening up the whole, this is what the roadmap for this is going to be. It's like, when you look at it, you think, so how much of this could you have actually just done?
Well, that's what's going on with Battlefield 5 at the moment. You know, Battlefront 2 has a clear roadmap that it's stuck to for every single year that it's been released. And you know, Siege is a similar thing. They have a different season each time. And Battlefield, they've had like loads of confusion over the roadmap recently, and that leads to consumer uncertainty.
Yeah.
And again, I'm curious to see how this games as a service post-launch, like a season pass funded by microtransactions thing, works out next year, because certain, you know, studios aren't committing to their roadmaps, which again is an issue in itself.
I remember Mass Effect Andromeda didn't have to, but completely abandoned theirs. It's not like EA didn't have the money to keep it going, but obviously it wasn't financially viable and it wasn't, you know, doing very well critically or commercially, so they just abandoned it. And the DLC that was potentially coming for that is just never going to happen again.
It's just like, just give things more time in the oven. That's honestly one of the biggest things, because with the season pass based, microtransaction based games as a service game, is there ever a point you can look at it and think, right, this game's finished?
Well, they don't want it to be. That's the thing.
But it's like, when is it that you realize that there's going to be a sequel? Like, were you expecting there to be a Ghost Recon sequel? Would you not have thought they would just keep going with Wildlands? It's like them turning up doing a Siege sequel. It's kind of like,
well, it's like doing a Rocket League 2 at this point. Like, if it's done well, then you can kind of plug those things in.
It's frustrating as well, because this leads into a self-fulfilling prophecy where you have a game like Siege the game itself has a very, very compelling multiplayer. It's kind of lived and died by the strength of its unique multiplayer edition. There are still elements of the series hardcore who are asking, where's the single player? Where's the co-op?
Because it was first
where's
announced. All this? And
that's never going to come, which is mad. They got Angela Bassett in to market that game single player. And
that's what I used to associate with that game as well. And when it came out and everyone started playing Siege again, I was like, oh man, I'm going to go up. I'm finally going to check that out. And it's like, she's not even in there anymore.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few narrations and that's
okay.
And it's like, well, where does this leave us? You know, I guess you're seeing legitimate success with the multiplayer, but when does the series lose its identity?
I think it's interesting talking about, because I had a point in here about the difference between a demo that we get shown and what we get at release. And for the most part, obviously there are so many stories of games being shown at E3 and different trade shows that are nowhere near what we end up getting hands on with. Which, like, I guess is the first part of this, is like, how much do you think the industry like would benefit from delving into perception and just saying ahead of time, like, this is what we're aiming for. This is a target render. Like, this is what we're aiming for. This might not be what you get, but at the state of the game as it is, the size of the levels that we've coded so far, we can bump the graphics up and that's why it looks like this, and we'll show you this. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, you have to understand that once we add 7 more worlds, we might bump the graphics down or whatever, like what happened with The Witcher, where CDPR was saying it's not a downgrade, this is as optimum as it could possibly be given the size of the game as it was at the end, but that's not what it was when we first showed it off. For me, I would be like totally fine with them saying like, this is a target render.
Transparency.
Mm-hmm. Perception and transparency. I don't know if you guys think like that would help in terms of the way that games are shown off publicly.
Weird, because I would be the kind of person to rather have seeing something how it will actually look. Honestly, like, this is how it's going to look. Like, yeah, it doesn't look as good as a target render, but that's pushing the boundaries of what we could really do. Mm-hmm. This is what the game will really look like to you. It's like Ubisoft are one of the prime examples of like, this is something that looks really, really fancy and you get it and it's nowhere near as good. Mm-hmm. That's a personal thing. I'd rather see it as it will look, because I would kind of like to know if there's something that's very blatantly pre-rendered and they say, this isn't gameplay, fine. Mm-hmm. But don't make something pre-rendered and play it off as gameplay, because even...
Oh, don't do a Killzone 2.
But I don't know. It's hard, really. You need to market the game, you need to get people invested, but it's like, you also don't want to be lying.
That's the issue as well, because Ubisoft as well, they never fulfilled the... And I love Ubisoft. I think they're, you know, of all the publishers, they're one of the only few that are like, aren't tied up by a big, you know, evil super mega corporation. I genuinely believe that making video games is a genuine passion of theirs. Mm-hmm. But there is something about this routine and formula that is going to end up killing this company, because we have... stuff like Breakpoint has an amazing E3 showing, has so many cool different things, and you can see that they're actually addressing stuff from the previous entry. And then you get to the beta, which is a month before the game releases, and, you know, like you said, they're not going to be able to address everything. The lack of polish is killing it. And, you know, why can't you just be transparent and just delay the game a little bit? Because, you know, Wildlands was only 2 years ago. You could literally, you could sit on this for another year to make sure that it's absolute, at its absolute optimum. But
didn't they just
not...
release a new mode for Wildlands as well? Or they went back.
There was one last
something.
Month, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like it's not active. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's where the sort of the publisher whims come back in again. And it's just sort of like, no, well, we have a financial window. Like, we want to hit this by the end of the year. We want the Christmas sales. We want all that stuff. But it does, again, we keep using Ghost Recon, but it is such an obvious example. And Ubisoft have been such an obvious example this generation. If you look at something like Assassin's Creed Unity, so many examples of games just being rushed out the door. There was no reason that Assassin's Creed Unity couldn't have been delayed. Mm-hmm. It was just because it was being touted as this big, you know, the next generation starts here and this is our new thing and whatever.
It's like even across the last generation, the times that the games have been delayed, the outcry that I think publishers expect from fans saying, oh, but we want the game, it's never really been
Red Dead 2.
Yeah.
Perfect example. That game was meant to release, a year after its first trailer? It ended up being another year after that until it actually came
Days
out.
Gone. Days Gone was delayed twice. And as much as people were starting to kind of lose interest in it, obviously it came out and it was in a state that was like, okay, this is really good. Mm-hmm. I had another example and it's completely
left. I was going to say Cyberpunk, because it was like they made that part of their advertising.
Ready when it's ready. Metroid Prime 4,
right?
A game people have wanted for God knows how long, and they said, we're just going to restart it entirely, and everyone went, yeah, okay.
But it's totally transparency in the perception of the game itself. Like, they could not have been more transparent. Like, I forget the name of the dude that hosts the Nintendo Direct, but literally came out and bowed to the audience and said, we're sorry, we want to delay it, and just complete honesty. That's what we're doing. And Nintendo obviously known for doing their own thing left, right, and center, but in that case, they were literally just saying and apologizing to the fans, and we'll have it to you in the next few years.
I mean, yes, there were people who were like, oh, but you know, I was really hyped, even though we'd literally just seen a logo.
Yeah.
Most people were really very supportive of it, the idea. I always look back at Portal 2 and that got delayed, and, you know, look at how that turned out. It was only delayed for like, I think it was meant to be coming out in November and it released in like April, the year after.
But it's my birthday that year.
Nice. It was only a couple of months, but it was like, Portal 2 is one of the best games ever made. So it's like, the fact they gave it a little bit more time, it's something they should really stick to. As I said, Fallout 76, give it another year and it would have been a lot better.
People will accept, like, yeah, delays and, like, you know, if they know that the end product's going to be worthwhile. I just, like, yeah, it is that issue with, like, there's so much money in the deception.
Yeah.
That, it takes a lot for, like, these massive multi-million dollar or whatever companies to actually acknowledge that they do need to delay something or,
Portal,
you know, whatever.
It's going to be 10 years old next year.
I mean, Arkham Asylum is already 10 years old.
Yeah.
No, Portal 2 is 2011.
2010.
Was it?
2010.
I thought it was
this we can debate out in the office, chums, because GTA 3 is a teenager, so don't worry. Also, so is Vice City and San Andreas. But not to worry. Yeah, I think there's been pros and cons to demos, betas, and early access stuff. I think it depends how it's done. A couple of the examples that I had, another one to show the other side of the spectrum, if we take Ghost Recon as something that kind of feels like it was, you know, playable too early, it's very much resulting in people going, I'm going to wait and see what the review's like and everything. The other side of that, in terms of paying for early access, is Gears 5, which I think Microsoft have done very well tying it with the Game Pass Ultimate. You can play it for like £2 or whatever, and there's this new marquee franchise. Gears 5 is brilliant. And it actually works as something that, like, one of the first games that I've played in a long time that I've played early, where it's like, you can play it 4 days early, and it's not been a total train wreck. It's like, they've had enough time to put it out, and it's been a long time since Gears 4, it feels like a while. The Coalition know what they're doing, they've prioritized quality. It feels like something that is actually available when it's supposed to be available. I wouldn't be surprised if the early access date is what they were actually aiming for in the first place.
Which would make the most sense.
Yeah, and it's like, here's the version as you're supposed to be getting, and the only reason that you're paying more or paying differently is because, you know, you want to get the ultimate pass and it works on that level as well. But yeah, I think for the most part, going in early doesn't work in this industry. But,
not at this level.
Yeah.
If it's an indie level, indie development that needs that kind of help, fine. That's why I've invested in Satisfactory when that first came out, because that was a game that was in development. Like, we've only had two major updates since the game came out publicly in March, I want to say. But it's like, just going through that game and keeping up with development, you know, being a tester of it as someone who's really excited for this game, I was like, not shut up about it. Like, doing that, I'm completely down with.
Which is, that's the heart of why those things got off the ground in the first place. It's like, let's build a community and a fan base around, let's all get this to the finish line together. I remember when Prison Architect came out, and it was like, working on that, like, I didn't go on that, but my wife did, and like, got invested in it and was like, keeping up with the community updates and stuff. It's like, there is a really nice, wholesome way to develop a game alongside a fandom.
Planet Zoo are doing it as well.
Yeah.
They've got the beta for that at the end of this month, and that's coming out in November, so that's still a good like month and a bit away from release, and everything that I've seen of it, even the Gamescom, they were showing off the game, and it's like, this game's basically done.
Right.
Like,
I think overall, like, this generation kind of represents like a flirtation with twisting what early access is supposed to be, to the point
I think
where
it's pretty much only come from the AAA mentality. Like I said, the AA mentality. You've got things like PUBG. I would say Planet Zoo, Planet Coaster, that's
totally
a AA mentality.
Yeah.
They're going in with the right idea, whereas AAA are saying, look, here's something that's a popular thing. Let's just monetize it. Let's turn it into, you can play it early.
You can push
like
a button.
Like what EA did with the 5,000 different versions of Anthem.
Oh, God, yeah. I think it's just like, this is in a state where you can push a button to fire a gun. We can do something with it where it's in a public space. Which, like I said, last generation, they would take a lot longer. I totally recommend the Devolver Digital. I'm sure it's 2017's conference.
Was that their first big one?
I think it was their first one. Yeah, it's brilliant. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments if you're watching the video version, or come find us on social media if you're listening on any of the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the World Culture Gaming podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Goodbye.
And Rich Hudson.
Thanks for listening and or watching.
Good, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye. Bye.
How dare you be more polite than me?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.